He's built a world-class organization based on collaborating with the genius of others. And this isn't a mistake. It's who he is at his core. And with all of the things that his personal brand touches globally and locally with the organizations he leads. His philosophy is centered on a belief that orchestrating a collision of the greatest minds can only lead to great things. My guest today on Think Underground, he's on a mission. He's an entrepreneur, an innovator, and the founder of Busch Systems International and Visionberry, Craig Busch. Welcome, Underground.
Hey, thanks, Mario. So nice to be here, and so nice to see you again.
This is Think Underground. Insightful and intelligent conversation with entrepreneurial giants, impact leaders, and titans. Coming up next on Think Underground.
It is, it's always a pleasure. It is always a pleasure to see you. And I'll say this, Craig, it's not frequent enough. So I was joking with you just before we started today that, you know, I had to wrangle you on here in order to see you, but I'm so glad that we were able to do this. So let's dive right into it, Craig.
Okay.
You're on a mission, and you really are. Ever since the day I met you, this goes back a number of years, there was something different about you, and it wasn't self-serving. You were on this sort of mission that was bigger than you. It was bigger than me, and something about your energy and something about your enthusiasm just was just a little bit contagious. So tell me, what's this mission you're on?
For me, I just want to leave a positive footprint in whatever it is, right? I know that people know me generally as a CEO, but I really, what moves me is design and creating. And so anytime I see an opportunity for something that's not happening or something that could be, that's what really excites me to vision and see what doesn't exist and then wrap people around that, attract a tribe to that, and then move it forward as a collective. That's the type of thing that really gets me going.
So many people, I think, quite reasonably, fairly, would just get frustrated when they see things that aren't the way that they would like them. How did you change your mindset? What did you need to do to reprogram yourself, if that ever was you? I don't know. But how did you convert that into enthusiasm for the opportunity of what could be?
I think the approach, RF, of just having conversations. Like when the idea, it started with the gym equipment along the waterfront, and that was just a conversation among beer drinking CEOs at Donnelly's, you know, collect, which probably was a bit of a foundation of the sandbox, really. But it's just the idea that you could start to have conversations of people who had some commonality and build a better idea and talking together and build some sort of force behind it. And then with that one, we engaged with the city and then worked collaboratively with the city to create the gym equipment. And then that made me realize you bring all the right people on early days and look at things collaboratively rather than trying to get something done. Pull the partners in, the potential partners in, see who's got interests and pull them together and form it together so that you're not really selling it to anybody. That everybody's just engaged behind the idea and you've got the momentum, multi-pronged momentum behind it. I was saying the other day, we could not have done the sandbox without the city resources. All the amazing people at InvestBerry, they put in a lot of the legwork that the volunteers at a not-for-profit didn't have before we had staff. And it wouldn't have happened without their force behind it at the city and their creativity.
So what I'm hearing, though, actually, and I'm actually reflecting back and going back a few years to when a lot of the things that we enjoy the benefit of today didn't exist yet, and they really weren't even a concept yet. Mm-hmm. You're talking about having a beer at Donnelly's, but you know, I know I'm also hearing you, show respect and gratitude where you believe it's due, and that was with the resources that you were able to tap into and draw on. However, if there's one thing that I'm actually, if I rewind this back a little bit, one of the conversations that we had, we're going back a number of years now, included an observation from you that I interpreted as, it may not be as you said it, but I interpreted as, there are so many great opportunities that we have here that haven't happened, and that hasn't happened for a variety of reasons. It could be timing, it could be scheduling, it could be budget, but it also included an element of will, and whether that's political will or otherwise. And I think what you, if I remember correctly, the thing that resonated with me was, hey, Arif, you know, instead of going and starting a conversation to make it happen, what if we actually just made it happen? Mm-hmm. And then we don't care about who gets the accolades for it. We'll set it all up. We'll make it all possible. Mm-hmm. And we'll put it in front of the people who have the ability to make the decision to move mm-hmm. it forward at a council decision at a municipal level. And then we all win. You know, and that's really where you were when it came to the gym equipment. I recognize that the sandbox, and I want to give people some context who are joining us today and listening. The context around the sandbox was sort of like a, you know, if you look at the gym equipment, was almost like a pilot project of, could we make something happen? And the sandbox was like, okay, we've taken the beta, now let's do something big and meaningful.
Right. Exactly like that. Except the sandbox was nowhere on the horizon. It was the gym equipment and finished. Right. But that what turned out to be, yes, the prototype, the test pilot for actually doing the sandbox. And the sandbox is a bit of a proof of concept for moving the market district forward.
So, exactly. So interesting evolution. But so that we, let's get into, I want to talk about this market district and what that's all about. But maybe you can take some of the philosophy, because I believe that you're taking those core ideologies of the collision space, the venue, that space that allows for different thinking and free thinking and collaborative thinking and how do you call it? Not competitive thinking. You know what I mean? Like collaborative, really, where everybody's coming because they want the world to be a better place. We want everybody to rise where possible from the benefit of the contribution of each of the parts that make up the sum. Mm-hmm. But it's through that mindset and that thinking and those people who come together that we're now going to be talking about the marketplace. So maybe give us a little bit about the thinking and the philosophy at the sandbox that has really allowed that next level of progression to happen.
Right. I think RF, the sandbox was intended to be the center of the business community. Okay. Not just the larger companies, not just the smaller companies, like everybody, where we all meet together and we share information with each other in a supportive environment. And I really feel the market, and, you know, kudos to Craig Stevens and Tom Ambo Jr. and Wayne Hay. These people have traveled all over North America looking at market districts and have become experts in them. And when I got introduced to it, I got introduced by them to the concept, and they'd been at it for quite some time already. And what I'd never seen the sort of market they talked about, where the permanent market that operates all the time would have vendors and would prepare food, would be takeaway food, but food and beer and such you can have right there, and have communal tables and socialize and meet. And I realized they were creating a center of community, right? Which is a reflection of what's happening upstairs at the sandbox, because the main building for the permanent market is this first floor of the transit terminal, and that, when the transit terminal moves to the Allendale Go area. And so they were creating the equivalent on the first floor for the whole community of what we created for the business community on the second floor. And then that really soaked my thought process. But then there was the consultant's report. It was a decent report, probably the best consultant's report I've seen on anything, because I just generally do not trust consultant's reports. Right. And because they're not from here. Right. And that's a paid gig. I believe when we have ownership of what we're creating and we live with it long term, it's more credible and we have more passion behind it. But it didn't cross Simcoe Street. So Lakeshore, it didn't cross Lakeshore. So we've always talked about connecting downtown with the waterfront, and that didn't do it. So I was kind of moved to take an action then, because my creative visualization saw more and wanted to convey more about what I thought could be, and the connectivity piece, and not just the market be a building, but the market be and as they talked about a whole district, but a district of different engagements and joy and surprise and that sort of thing, which is buildings, but it's also an energy. So I made a video to convey that so that people could at least have a starting point of what a market could be, because you can describe things in words all day long, but visual is what really kind of impacts people. And it's hard to cover it all in word. I think, you know, apart from the 8 reports from the market task force, I think we've got at least 8 addendums covering lighting and types of buildings and activations and all that kind of stuff, because the area is only good as the activations too. So I don't remember what the original question was. Hope I answered it.
I think the original question is almost irrelevant at that point. let's dive down a little bit deeper, because I think what you're talking about, I'm seeing it in a few different sort of segments, if you will. And those segments include the fact that when you're dealing with change, and the change is something that requires input, buy-in, belief, resources, cash, all those types of things that are beyond your individual capability or realm of responsibility, and it does tap into the requirement of buy-in from others. And then when that buy-in is also required from an institution or a governing body, when we talk about it in that sort of sense, we're not talking about human beings anymore. We're talking about agencies and institutions and government, and those are all nameless and faceless. And here you are trying to sow belief and nurture and gain and reap belief from what you're sowing from sometimes institutions that are, again, without their own heartbeat. And then you refer to the fact that you tapped into the reading and the reviewing of a consultant's report, which, as you gave credit, was one of the better ones that you've ever read, but it was still from an agency that is not part of the heartbeat or the lifeblood organization that they are here to judge on. So when that agency or that outside entity is looking at it and they've got no vested interest in the outcome, and therefore they're supposed to be bringing neutrality, I suppose, they're looking at it from what perspective? Is that perspective dollars and cents? Is it based on metrics and KPIs and data that is also without emotion associated to it? And you're looking to make the city better, and you're looking to make the city everything that it can be, and you're here to improve the quality of life of people, and all of those things are emotional, and yet you're faced with all of these things that are unemotional, who are forces not necessarily working against you, but forces that you have to work with. So where is the opportunity to turn that into something, to take that thing that is without life and get some emotion out of that, you know, that investment that you're looking to make with those stakeholders?
Yeah, you know what? David Suzuki spoke at Georgian College for the first time ever on an Earth Day, first time ever outside of BC on an Earth Day, just before COVID. And he talked about the giant trees in BC. And he says they need, I'll get this wrong, but like nitrogen 18, okay, to grow that big. But they only have nitrogen 17, only naturally occurs in that soil. So how do they have giant trees? Well, in the end, the trees come from the salmon, okay? And the salmon spawn, bears eat them, fish eat them, and then dissipates that N18 throughout the ecosystem. And so you end up with giant trees. And so David Suzuki says, how can you manage an ecosystem like that by having a department of forestry and a department of water and a department of land use and a department of this, you know, and all these different departments? And if it were a city, we'd never have giant trees, right? Because everybody's managing their own thing. And cities are managed not to fail at stuff, okay? They aren't created to make everything 10 out of 10. But they prevent things from being 2 out of 10. They prevent failure. So they manage to make sure that mistakes aren't made, but they're not managed around the ultimate vision. And if somebody's one department's got an ultimate vision, they need all these other departments to have the same vision. And I doubt that. And something cities do really well, like, hey, RF, are the streetscaping. Fantastic. Apart from the fact that the waste and recycling containers are ugly, the beautiful job of it, right? And so that's something that a city can vision and plan, and people have created these sort of streetscapes, and that's something that can be rolled out of. You rolled out at a 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 of better recycling waste containers. And so that can be done, right? So, but that's canned, and that's canned, right? People have done this before. That's not a unique, right? And when you've got a unique, and the city of Barrie is unique, like the waterfront we've got, the way we wrap around it, just the city of Barrie is being, it's evolved, and great things have been done in the past. It is poised to be, and our purpose statement of Vision Barrie is to create the most connected, energized community with the highest quality of life in Canada for Barrie. And the tools are there. The question is, do we make it 6 out of 10 or we make it 10 out of 10?
Right. So I was going to ask you that. What is the difference between good and great?
Thinking through the whole process, the details, right? But just the visioning of everything that could be, all the elements that would make it great, the activations, you know, I hear for the past, you know, let's put a giant farmer's market that's activated half a day a week in the center of the market district. I've heard, let's put Fisher in the middle of the market district. Let's put, why don't we have a stadium in the middle of a market district? The thing is, what is successful about a market district is it's active all the time. Lovely people give me books all the time, RF. Okay. I don't really read books. Okay. I read 4 business books ever. I just talk about them a lot. Okay. But 5 years ago, I realized I knew nothing about placemaking or market districts. So that's when I started to read again, and I absorbed everything I possibly could, including online learning, symposiums, groups, everything to learn. There's an art behind this, and it comes down to safety, lighting, surprise. You don't have giant roadways. You've got it come around corners. People navigate different ways. There has to be different energy. Every 10 to 15 meters, there's got to be some new engagement. So you can't put a big block in the middle of it because it's just a walk around now that people walk around most of the time that interrupts the flow and the energy.
You're creating
the placemaking.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
You're creating an obstacle. And you are breaking that energy you talk about. Yeah.
Yes. It sucks all the energy out of it. Right. So how do you create something that's got 100,000 different components, sorry, not 100,000, 100 or 1,000, okay, different components of it that all come together to create that kind of magic and an energy and engagement, that surprise that people want to come back to all the time. You know, you can drink a $2 beer at home, right? Why do you go to a pub and pay $7 for it? Right. There's a reason for that. There's a whole human social engagement interaction. And we are people of community. Right. And without a vital downtown, without a market district, we're all very disparate and hanging out in our own areas best we can. Sure, arenas are a center of community as well. But we don't have a real heart of our community. And with the waterfront and what we've got here at what currently is the transit terminal in this district, we have, I see it so clearly, and I've tried to convey it. We have the opportunity for something magical.
So when I listen to you, I'm drawing on some experience that I've had in the recent past engagement with my own community, such as you, different perspectives, right? Mm-hmm. And different levels of input, different contributions. One of the things that I learned, though, and I would say one of the things that I learned by witnessing it from a different lens than others who contribute, I have my own, is that people, you're right, people do come together. The people are the city, and the people do come together to serve, and they volunteer in one capacity or another. And they're really, it really is done when done well and when done right and harmoniously. It's done without ego. It's done. How can I serve? How can I give? How can I offer? What is my skill set that I can contribute? And in any organization that depends on its community, there are those who can give money because they don't have time to offer or expertise. There are those who can give time, but they don't have money or expertise, right? Right. And so the goal, when received with the right attitude and energy, is that of gratitude for whatever we can receive from that contribution. What can we get out of that contribution? And when you look at city governance, is really part of what you're talking about, is the planning and the evolution and the growth of a community or a city involves a number of different inputs. And those inputs include making sure that we've got the right community safety in mind, whether that's policing or EMS or fire services, or whether that's the planning of the streetscapes, as you talked about, the right lighting, et cetera. And then there's the other side. It's obviously engineering, and then there's budgeting. But there's also a component for all of the right reasons, and I say that in air quotes, and I'm sorry that I did that, but it's not meant to be sarcastic. It is a necessary, it's a reality, but there's a component or a cohort or a group that is tasked with responsibility, and it's our definition and interpretation of what does responsibility look like. And so the responsibilities include fiduciary responsibility, which means to me that as an expert, I am expected to act at a level or with a level of understanding that maybe average people might not have there, because it is my area of expertise. I'm expected to act fiscally responsibly. Mm-hmm. I'm also expected to act, a different department, a different silo that you were referencing earlier, right? I'm expected to act in a way that mitigates risk. And that risk could be financial. That risk could be exposure of another, element. Ooh. So you're here trying to build something for the greater good of the community, to breathe life, to breathe energy, quality of life, and all these things. And yet you're met by people who are charged with their responsibility to act in a manner that mitigates risk and mitigates dollars spent and acts in accordance with this and acts in accordance with legislation or whatever else. How can you not be set up for some form of inefficiency towards reaching the ultimate goal?
For me, a lot of the time, I get people that are better at it, okay, that are good at working through stuff and the details and the negotiations on the stuff that I generally find annoying. Well, myself and others can focus on what the proactive stuff is, build the energy, the vision. In any successful organization, any successful group, you have a right mix of people. Some are work through the details with people, the I-dotters, the T-crossers, the legal, all that kind of stuff. And then sometimes you just got to push a little harder. Right.
So, let me ask the question differently though, Craig, because I realize maybe I didn't land the question quite right. If we accept that traditionally and conventionally those roles have existed, mm-hmm. how do we evolve all people's thinking towards the fact that while you have those traits and roles and responsibilities, what's good and right and true includes buying into this vision of quality of life, includes right. buying vision into what a healthier community can be. So that sometimes it's not risk as a negative thing, but sometimes it's an investment towards believing that if we build that positive momentum, if we build that positive energy, if we get the right people down there, it has been proven time and again, bare and empty streets don't necessarily make the crime rate higher, but it does create an opportunity for negative things to happen and also an opportunity for negative things to stand out. Whereas if you backfilled and flood it with positive and you backfill it and flood it with energy, and if you backfill it and flood it with good things happening, it has a natural way of figuring the other stuff out.
Right. You know, I think, RF, I'll do better this time. Although last time was authentic.
I wouldn't edit this out.
I think people make emotional decisions and then ratify them mentally. And so I think this whole disparate stuff of developers, you know, throwing a snowball and the city throwing a snowball back, right? Or darts or whatever. Like, there, everybody's just best guessing. And then we end up at a compromise, right? Or something that's just like, okay, nobody's delighted with, but nobody's upset about. And I think getting people together and having conversations, I think you find out a lot about each other and the goals and what could be. And I think it's helping to bake in the vision and enable people to see a higher vision of what could be and get them excited about it. You know, the goal of Vision Berry is to continue to expand our group. But we really, you know, when we did the initial one, just before COVID, the kind of group get together, initial brainstorming, we had three counselors there, right? And the goal is to get all the political leadership of Berry, all of the, you know, department people who want to engage, developers, the general population, business leaders. Let's get us all together and kind of creating the same vision together and get us behind it and get us excited about it so that we're not putting up blockers. We're all going, love it. How can we make this happen? Right. So we're all on the same page and we're all motivated behind the same thing. And we all understand, rather than us making pitches at each other, let's figure it out together and then see how we can all make it together.
It's funny you say that, because we've had conversations internally with our organizations where, I mean, I could pick a random example, but, you know, here's what we're looking to do. And the default is often, okay, I get it. That's nice. But, and whatever but is, this is your roadblock. This is what's going to be the problem. This is why it's not possible. This is going to be your, you know, your barrier. And I think many people, simply because of our training and our conditioning and the way we have negotiated our way through life, would stop there. And something that we tried, and I won't take credit for it, it's my partner Mallory is the one who's really you know, excelled in this area, is said, I get it. I understand it. But if you were to do it, how would you do it? And it's amazing what happens next, because suddenly you open the floodgates and they're like, well, if I was to do it, I would do this, 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 this. And it was that one little question.
Right.
And next thing you know, they solved the entire problem and you're like, oh, okay, well then let's go do that. And they're like, right. Okay. But there's a disconnect, or there's an opportunity to build a bridge in conventional disconnects. And it sounds to me like that's what it's going to take to take a city, a community, from being somewhere ranking on the conventional charts of what we expect as status quo, to really, truly being exceptional and the highest quality of living in the country.
I think what you're saying it's true. We all have natural, we don't like change. We don't like, there's a pre-programming to kind of resist stuff. And I hear what you're saying, and what Mallory is saying is, with the engagement, you with that question, the people will take themselves around that barrier and work to solve it, right? Like, a lot of times the role of the CEO is to try not to take no for an answer, right? Occasionally you got to accept no, okay, or dumbing down of your want. But overall, there's a motivation to not accept obstacles, right? And to figure out how to do it. But sometimes, like you're saying, in a political spectrum or whatever, sometimes maybe the juice is not worth the squeeze, or the bureaucracy can be the blocker. I've seen in Berry that there's a lot of really quality people who are innovative, creative in Berry, and sometimes, you know, structure doesn't allow for it. I don't know, because I'm not in it, but if we can create structures that allow that sort of free forming and unlock the brilliance that is employed by the city of Berry in engagement with the population, man, this could be really powerful. I'd love this to be an example on how cities can run.
So take me on a bit of a journey 5 years out from now, because any type of development takes a little bit of time, engineering, planning, some putting some money together, some shovels in the ground, et cetera. What does it look like in 5 years from now? You've got the approvals. What does that energy look like? What does the market look like? And how did the city change?
Well, we're working through it right now, but I see that there's probably 10 different components of the market district, right from the artisan district on Kids Creek to the X building by the Spirit Catcher pop-ups, the market building, the triangle building. There's a lot of different aspects to it. And some of that stuff is aspirational, hopefully, a butterfly pavilion, that sort of thing. And so I'm kind of looking to carve this into pieces. So we've got to be fiscally responsible here, right? And there's a lot of demands on the capital budget, and this can be phased in. So looking at breaking into pieces, and if the feds or the province come up with a program around this, I'd love to have one of these components be able to fit with that funding in order to help extend the municipality's contribution, right? So how do we do this effectively, sequence it? So all of these things can be a bit independent. The permanent market's the first thing, right? And it's got to be built with an extension because the Mexican restaurant's on the one end. So it's now undersized. So it needs an extension, and it needs the triangle building as the city, as the seating and the multi-use flex space. So that needs to be built in at one time because that's all the components of the permanent market. If you don't do that, if you don't put the extension on the triangle, you've underbuilt it. People will come once and maybe come back in 6 months.
We've got plenty of examples of being underbuilt in this city, and probably it's not unique to this city, but you know, whether it's a performing arts center or the arena stadiums, that kind of thing, we have plenty of examples of that.
Right. And so what I'm uncomfortable with Fisher right now because we've talked about, we have consultant reports on it. I feel we don't know what we're doing, right? And I don't think that there'll be a Fisher too. Like if we screw this up, we screw it up big for forever, right? So I feel that we really should be activating Mavericks and Five Points Theater and Meridian Place and maybe Sadland and get good at activating these spaces and figure out, you know, whether that's done by a not-for-profit or whatever, you know, with some funding from the city. But let's figure out what we want. Rama has a radius of performances, right? Like, so we have to know what our circumstances are and build exactly the right thing. It wouldn't be great if we could build it with people that already know how to activate this stuff so that we go into it running when we do actually build it. But I'm concerned. So that's a bit of a sideways on my concern about spending tons of money. In my business, I do not spend a ton of money on something, and I try never to, unless I am as sure as I can possibly be that I have all the data and I'm making the best educated guess. It's always a guess. So where do you make the best educated guess?
Where does that data come from? Do we need to be the first of its kind in every one of those 10 components, or is the first of its kind, or is it about the first of its kind, or is it the best of its kind?
You know, permanent markets have been done a lot. So that's an easy one. But what I want to do by making flexible components of it that all work kind of synergistically, none of them is intended as a silver bullet. They're all as intended as a components, right? So we're not building a $70 million Taj Mahal that we could screw up on. Okay, what we're building is components that cost, that are comparatively small capital costs that all come together over a period of time. This can be funded over a period of years in order to make something that works organically where they're all part of a bigger body and a bigger energy and a bigger activation. But any one component of it, if something doesn't activate the way you want it to, it's not a massive mistake. It's part of the whole thing, and the whole thing is activated. And so the idea is to create some flexibility too. Like we've been to the sandbox, like ants. I just did the whole place change this morning while I was here, right? And that was the intention, that it be a flexible modular space. That's the intention behind the market too. Yes, there are fixed components of it, but there'll be a lot of things like pop-ups and that sort of thing, and flows and engagement and events that move and change so that it's always dynamic, and then you can redirect energy and resources and keep it changeable.
Now, this isn't unique, and this isn't something that is so far out of reach as a concept. If you look at an art gallery, a museum, the science center, a theme park, all of them are built on the sum of the parts. And you can isolate, you know, even cloud computing and server technology, right? You can isolate the one that's not performing the way it needs to, or when it's time to upgrade. But all of these things that you're discussing, you're talking about, you see this as being a series of components that can be built in and phased in over time. Maybe 10 components is the round number that we're looking at here. But of everything that you're talking about, one of the things that has sort of stayed with me is, if I'm looking to engage other people, whether I'm actively looking to engage them as stakeholders or participants in the build, or whether I'm looking to get buy-in because they're a taxpayer and this thing lives or dies based on sort of either supporting the build of it or supporting the operation of it once it's built. The question that comes to mind is always, you know, someone's going to be asking, what's in it for me and why should I care? So when I look at those, listen to those 10 different components, but what is the thing that is maybe intangible that is going to get my buy-in as a resident for my family that says, I love this. This is going to change my life. It's going to improve my life. It's going to make this the place that I want to spend my time, my dollars, my investment, my retirement, whatever it may be.
Right. It's the feeling of belonging in a community, I think. Like, we experience this every day at the Sandbox, the feeling that you belong to something bigger. And it's the energy of being part of a community. But the intention overall in the market is to have a mixture, particularly as you cross Simcoe Street, of green spaces, more open spaces, but then also activities and energy throughout the whole place. And I've always marveled at Murphy's Irish Pub in Sonoma, okay, that, you know, you've got, you know, little kids in there, and then you've got adults, and then you've got the grandparents, usually with long hair and a ponytail, are about to go in the back room and be in the band. And you've got that whole range where it's not targeted at an age group or gender or anything. It's intended to be a place where everybody can go and be together and engage. You know, my goal at the X building is to be able to have, you know, playground by it, so the parents can sit on the patio around the fire or just, you know, have a drink and something to eat and be able to be there with the kids, watch the kids, but be able to be adult with other adults, right? That's so those sort of engagements that no matter who you are, what you like, you're going to be stimulated, activated, and engaged and feel part of the community there.
So stimulated, activated, and engaged. And when I think about those three things, I think about, you know, one of the things that people have to look forward to, certainly over the last 3 years when we weren't able to go anywhere, was where could we go to escape? Mm-hmm. And what is the city or the town or the country that we could go to escape? And so you name it, whether it's Europe and you're going to Italy, or you're going to London in the UK, or you're going to an island paradise, or you're going to the States somewhere. People go there and they're going to these destinations to escape. But as soon as they get there, the very first question they ask is, you know, where is the place I can go? Where's the life? Not where's the crowd and where's the touristy things necessarily. Sometimes, yes. But also, where do the locals go and where do they hang out? Where's the vibe? Where's the energy? Where is the local? You know, I want to live like the locals. I want to experience Mexico like the locals do. And you get there and you're like, this isn't so bad. I could get used to this, right? And so people really, they do that, right? We always do that. And then we come back and some maniac has this crazy idea that they want to build a market and they want to transform the downtown and to make it to something that's an attraction and that people come congregate and you'd come and hang out and listen to music and kids would play and this. And you're like, not in my city. You know, and instead let's complain about the way things are. Let's not actually take 10% of that energy and change things to the way that they could be as right. I'm remembering what it was like when I went to that other place.
Exactly. Why is it we have to travel to get the experience that we want? Why was Amsterdam so magical as we sat on the patio with a bunch of other people and drank a coffee or a beer or whatever? Why was that magical? Why did that stick with us? And why can't we have that Why can't that be here in Barrie? Why can't that be every day versus, you know, having to go to Europe to get there? I be honest, most of my influences are European RF as I vision this. And I think a lot of people's are, because they have a kind of a nice quality of life community. Let's face it, a lot of places, particularly in the U.S., have been, you know, Walmartized, right? Like they've moved away from their core. They've moved away from those community centers. And the progressive ones are swinging back to it and recognizing that you don't have a community unless it's got a heart and got a center. And then there, you know, Barrie doesn't need to revitalize. Okay. There's a lot of great things and we're vital. Okay. And kudos to the BIA that's done a lot of amazing things over the year and the city over the years. But vitalizing what's already vital to take it to like 10X is what we can do. We're working off a solid platform already. We got a solid downtown. We got an amazing waterfront, you know, and we've got the amazing people. It's just, it's a matter of just synergizing all the resources we've got, people and places, to make something amazing so that we can have Europe or the Caribbean every single day. I can't promise the Caribbean every single day. That's a bit. But if we have a butterfly pavilion, I kind of can.
Yeah. But so some communities would actually have to pour in a massive investment to build that waterfront or to build that thing, you know, and you've seen it, whether it was in Dubai or whether it was in other parts of the world, that they literally have to truck in billions of tons of whatever it is to make that thing. And we've got that here as a natural, or 100 years ago it was manufactured, and we still have the benefit of it, but we just haven't taken it to the next step yet. So what I'm hearing, though, is that I'm really hearing that the difference between where we are now and where we could be is telling a story and bringing in that intangible emotional element to paint that picture and convey that message and that story of really what could be. Because once that buy-in happens, the rest really magically can happen. I mean, there's so much economic upside to making a relatively small investment. It's the secret that made the mall successful for the period of time that the mall was successful, and that is create a place where people will stay 1 minute longer. And for every minute longer they stay, there's a chance that they'll spend $1 more, right? And that really was Craig Stevens' magic that I remember hearing about a number of years ago. You talked about him and Tom. So you know, what's the gap now between here and where Vision Barrie needs to be to get this buy-in?
Yeah, I think, you know, at Bush Systems in 2015, I stated a goal that the nicest container in our product line, the most aesthetically beautiful container, by 2020, I wanted it to be 7 out of 10. What was a 10 out of 10 then, I wanted it to be a 7 out of 10 by 2020. And we did that. Okay. And it's about, you know, realigning your knowledge, your awareness, what could be. And it's, you don't always jump from 7 to 10. You go 7.5, 8, 8.5. I think we've got a vision that is 10 out of 10 right now. Okay. My goal is, as we build this out iteratively, that what we're thinking of today is 7 out of 10. Okay. That as a community, we visualize what could be and start to stack more ideas on it, so that everything we're doing has more bolt-ons that make it more valuable, but more elements, more functionality that gives us multiple uses, more activation, more energy. And I think we do that through conversation, right? So Vision Barrie, we've got that back on track. We've actually incorporated after the COVID. We were so rudely interrupted by COVID. And so we've got a vision of kind of priorities and where we're moving, and the market's way up on that priority list. But what we're going to be doing is communicating, building the group, then communicating via website, inviting a feedback loop for people to engage and share more information and more ideas, and send, you know, where they've gone, what experience they had, why it stuck with them. And then just to keep, you know, our whole flywheel is to kind of vision what could be, share what could be, take feedback on what else could be, and then incorporate it into the new could be, right? And then just keep that going. Because I think there's so many bright people here and so many engaged people. If we build it in a community, we can be an example of how you actually do that to make things amazing. And then once you vision the 7 out of 10, you keep doing all this stuff. Sorry, the 10 out of 10, that's going to be 7 out of 10. And that'll be through paying attention as you build it out, not failing, seeing new opportunities. I won't lie, I spent a ton of time on the gym equipment, every piece of gym equipment we fought for, and great people. We worked with great people in the city, but we tried to carve out the very best 6 locations for that gym equipment and put exactly the right pieces in there that looked aesthetically beautiful and they were oriented for exactly the right angle to have the best experience while you're on it. And it's caring about the little details that turn it from 7 to 10 when you actually execute. So it's keeping that caring, and that's not consultant, it's just people here that care about doing the best possible job when you actually go to implement each piece of it.
And it's amazing, Craig, because I'm listening to you speak, and at first what you're talking about almost sounds counterintuitive by taking something that's a 10 and making it a 7. But I realize that what you're saying is you're setting a bar that once you achieve that, that bar now becomes the baseline for you to build upon to go that next level higher.
We'll blast past that. I hear great ideas every day that aren't mine, right? And that's the goal. We all have great ideas. How do we create a format to unlock it so that we make a friend of mine, Jeff Bailey, who runs Vibe Acoustics in Markham, he used to be the president of Campless. He and I actually first started the Sandbox together. And he was telling me about a team building thing he went to where, you know, you dropped on an island, you know, you can take 10 of these 30 items you're going to take with you. He said that they said the best score that they ever had from an individual was worse than the worst score they ever had from a group. So
phenomenal.
Yeah. Engaged right with the right format, we make much better decisions together.
And with that in mind, Craig Bush, you are definitely someone who brings the vision. You are definitely someone who encourages and draws out the best in other people. I think that that's evident in pretty much every project that you have touched. And you live in a community that is certainly, you know, blessed to have that level of enthusiasm and sort of blue sky thinking, but that sort of magnetic approach to bring people in to really turn them into heroes and experts as well. And you push people on to do really good things. So I want to thank you for sharing that energy, that vision with me. I know that you've got some visual aids that we're going to sort of supplement this with, and we'll make sure that we put that out there. But if there was one thing that you want to leave, you know, listeners with, what is that one thing that you want as a takeaway?
I'll send you a picture of the Google Earth, you know, showing the Market District. And the funny thing is, like, there was no apartment buildings around when they built the Market District, but it is extremely geometrically pleasing. And like the combination of rectangles, squares, rounds, half rounds, triangles. And when we build the market out, I really want to respect that because it creates all kinds of interest, not just from the air, but physically as you move through the place. And there's all kinds of opportunities. Markets shouldn't work on one dimension. They should be three dimensional. So there's an opportunity for activities on floor 1.5 to 2.5, you know, so that we all are working in three dimensions. And just the location of it, that what's already being created, that architecture behind that, and Gary Silverberg at Debut has been, as far as I'm concerned, a brilliant developer here, and he's such a Barry fan. But his whole engagement and his whole main floor is activated in so many ways that he's already planned, and it's connecting with the market to create that flow through Dunlop. And it's just that kind of bigger synergistic thinking where we think about things as a bigger whole and respect what we've got already and to turn it into something special. I can see, smell, taste, visualize the Market District at Bilda, and it's going to be something really special. And we've been handed a gift, and it's helping everybody see it, that what the gift we have it is and how we can make the most of it.
Craig Bush, daring to be different, getting comfortable with being uncomfortable, and tapping into the genius of others. I want to thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing that vision with me, and I've really enjoyed this conversation. I can't wait till we get together next time.
RF Khan, I have learned from the very best, and I appreciate the people I work with. Thank you.
Thank you.
Think Underground is a SIVA Creative Incorporated production, written and hosted by RF Khan, produced by Brett Glover, with production assistance by Samantha Bowman, Cody Fitzgerald, William Gibson. Music courtesy 1M1 Music, directed by RF Khan. Executive producers Mallory Steele and RF Khan, created by Mallory Steele.